Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Troy Sincock and Sophie Thompson. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And a very good welcome to you this morning on Saturday. Troy Sincock for Deb Tribe is back again in a couple of weekends' time. You hear her on the radio Monday to Friday this week from 3 to 6. It's 28 to 9 and we're talking all things gardening with Sophie Thompson. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Troy, and good morning, listeners.
A foggy day and a great weekend to get out in the garden. We're talking about how to bring colour into your garden. We're basically talking about anything you'd like to talk about. 1-300-222-891. Also, just a quick message too, Sophie, just about pruning. This is from Steph near Karoonda. She said, we'll be in and out of phone range today, but because of the wonderful rains, lots of shrubs and trees have already been spring shooting, and with the forecasted El Nino, when do we actually prune?
Well, that's a great question. First off, I'd say, do you need to prune? If there are things that, you know, you usually do a tidy up to each year at the end of autumn or going into winter and you haven't pruned them, so that's the case in my garden, I was away, I'm going to get stuck in and do a lot of pruning now, so that then things come on. Everyone's actually going, well, what if they're, you know, what if we do get really dry? We need to take advantage of the moisture in the soil now. So if you're thinking of planting too, can I say, for lots of things, plant now. Excuse me. don't go planting subtropicals now because they'll hate you. It's too cold. But if you were thinking of putting some more, you know, plants in your garden to bring in the birds, you want some more natives in your garden, you want to plant your verge, the sooner you do it, the better, because we're all nervous about the future, and lots of people will be hanging out to listen to Darren Ray.
Absolutely. 1-300-222-891. Plenty of free lines available if you'd like to speak to Sophie pretty much straight away. We've got Bridie from Kingston Park on the phone. Hello, Bridie.
Good morning. I've got a question regarding planting a passion fruit and whether it'll be okay in a pot, which is probably only 30 to 40 centimetres deep.
Oh, it's not very big. Now, last weekend I was at the Woodcroft Community Centre and they have a community garden out the back. And when I was there, I was getting a tour and someone pointed out that they had grown passion fruit in the ground in this narrow little spot somewhere where I thought the root competition from the neighbouring tree would be way too much for them to thrive, and yet they were doing well. So if you must grow in a pot because that's your only option, I would certainly be looking at something bigger than 30 to 40 centimetres. 30 to 40 centimetres would be all right for a little bit, you know, a year or so if you're in transit. But then, you know, you can get 50 centimetre pots or 60 centimetre pots or preferably in the ground. But the thing about passion fruit, whatever you do, don't do anything now, because they are subtropical. And if you go and even if you bought one in the nursery or garden centre now and then you transplant it, you're going to disturb the root system and the roots are not going to like you. So just hold off. If you bought one now, keep it. Keep it in the small pot it's in. Keep it in a sort of warm spot and wait till, I mean, outside, but you know, maybe against a north wall or something like that so it gets a bit of warmth, and wait until the ground really warms up and the weather warms up, which is going to be sort of late September onwards.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay, Bridie, all the best.
1-300-222-891, 24 to 9 on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hills. Talk Back Gardening with Sophie Thompson. Sophie, before Talk Back Gardening this morning, I was talking to Alan at the Cedars. There's Heisen Gallery, which is opening for the first time today. That sounds like a beautiful property.
Oh, I haven't seen the new gallery, but I am a huge fan of the Cedars. And I have filmed a segment there about the garden. And what people don't realise is Hans Heisen actually built that garden. You know, you're walking along through the garden and you see the rock wall and you think he did the landscaping in that garden. And he was an environmentalist and he did love his roses. And it is, you know, it's sadly, I take lots of interstate people there because I think it's just extraordinary. And, you know, he was an amazing painter, but it's a real garden. It was his garden and he loved his garden. And so if Adelaide people haven't been to see the Cedars, can I tell you, you need to go there. It is an amazing treasure. And, okay, the deciduous trees will be a bit, you know, a bear at the moment, but, you know, I would say the garden probably hits its straps in late winter, spring, but under those deciduous trees there are hellebores and all sorts of beautiful plants. It is one of my favourite gardens.
And it sounds like Hans was very savvy too, from what Alan said. He just slowly bought out people's properties and his the grounds of his homestead just ever expanded. It sounds absolutely spectacular.
It is, and as you wander around, you know, do take your wellies, right, maybe have a change of shoes, because you want to have time to wander out in the property, because then you see, and I'm sure I didn't hear the interview, so I apologise if I'm repeating, I'm sure Alan would have talked about this, you see Hans's models, right? You know, you yeah. see the gum trees that were painted in the paintings, and there were these great little pop-up things that you can look, you open it, and there's a picture of the painting, and there's the tree. And, you know, the fact that he would pay the value of the tree to the farmer so that they didn't cut it down. He was a conservationist before we probably even knew that term.
Yeah, exactly. And the Heisen Gallery cost $9 million to put that together. You could be amongst the first people to experience it today in Harndorf. Go and pay it a visit. 1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie this morning. Susan, tell us about your Kwandong tree.
Oh, good morning, Sophie and Troy. Sophie, last year I bought a Kwandong tree up at Corn, and I spoke to you just after I came out of the shop from buying it. Mm-hmm. I have subsequently put in the ground when you said to, but now we're going to put the house on the market, and I want to grow that house. I'll grow that tree in a pot if I can.
And you've already planted it out?
I have. Oh. It's only about 6 inches tall.
I know.
It's not a very big one.
Okay. Can yes. I say, I don't know how well it's going to transplant. You know, it's a punt, right? You know, maybe head back to the Kwandong Festival this October and get another one, or have a go.
I think that might be a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll have a go, because I don't think, you know, unless anybody's interested in the garden, and I suspect the house will be bought by a developer.
Okay. Look, you've got nothing to lose. You know, I would definitely be using seaweed-based plant tonics to help overcome transplant mm-hmm. shock. I would be getting as much soil as you can. Good luck with that, Susan.
Yeah. Okay, then. Thanks, Sophie.
Thanks very much for your call. I can imagine, too, sometimes it's all about timing, isn't it? You know, when you don't know you're going to sell your home and you've planted this tree, you're expecting to have a future there at that property, and next thing, you're off somewhere else. People would get quite attached to their gardens in that way, moving from location to location.
They do, and as they should do, you know, and if you've got enough time, you know, there are many things that you can dig out. Now, I will say, you've got to dig them out before you put it on the market. I actually, when I was moving from my previous property, we filmed a segment on that. You know, you can take pots, you can dig some stuff out, but it has to be before you put it on the market. Or the other thing you can do, of course, is you can take cuttings. And so that, you know, you've got plants with you. In the end, because I knew I was going to be renting for a little while, I let nurseries that I deal with take cuttings so that I can go back to them and buy the plants that I used to have in my garden.
That is a very clever idea. All right, Victoria from Normanville, tell us about your pumpkin vine.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Troy and Sophie.
Morning, Victoria.
How are you? I've got a Jap pumpkin, which I've harvested 4 lovely big pumpkins off. The vine is looking, you know, pretty ropey, but there's still, I don't know, 3 or 4 sort of bigger than tennis ball size pumpkins on there. Are they going to come to anything, or should I just pull it out?
I reckon they're not, right? I hate to make the call. I have just harvested some like that and got all the vines out, you know, in the last couple of weeks since I've been back from being overseas. So those ones that have not developed properly, I have in my kitchen. Okay, and I'm still going to cook with them. They're just not going to be proper. You know, they're not going to store, right? They're not going to have a thick skin or anything like that. And they might, you know, you mightn't get much flesh. But I'm it's not that I'm too icky to waste them, but I figure I grew them.
That's why I'm asking, because I don't want to throw them away if they can, you know.
No, no, no. So I would still be using them in cooking, in curries, whatever you're doing, I'd still use them, but understand that, you know, the flavour won't be as good probably, and, you know, they certainly won't keep. So you need to, you know, over the next month or so, you need to use them in the kitchen.
Yeah, and leave the other ones until whenever, you know, because they'll last.
They will last. That's the whole thing. Once that skin gets hard, it lasts for a long time. And because you don't get, you know, in an area with frost, that vine would have been killed off, right? And you wouldn't.
Yes. Yeah.
But because you're milder down near the sea, the, you know, the vine's still hanging in there, I'd get it out of there and start prepping that soil, either to plant something in right now or to plant something in spring.
Yeah, okay. Lovely. Thanks very much.
All the best.
Thanks, Victoria. 17 to 9 on ABC Talkback Gardening, 1300 222 891. Andrew from Hope Valley says, no fog here today. Blue skies. We're 180 metres above sea level here today. Can see Adelaide 17 kilometres away, sitting in a bed of fog. Just up the road, you can't see the top of Anstey Hill. We're heading through the hills to Palmer shortly, so I expect the usual pea soup till late morning all the way. Andrew, thanks for your text message. Is it foggy where you are? Certainly looks that way no matter which window I look out of the ABC Collinswood studios. And do take care on the roads. Headlights on today. 1300 222 891. Abby's in Hawthorne Dean. You need some advice, Abby.
Yes, I do. Hi. Hi, Sophie. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
we're actually at Ashton at the moment, and it's pea soup here too.
Of course it is. You never see the sun before 11 o'clock in Ashton.
We're about to do a bushwalk, but I'm just a bit worried thinking that we're probably not going to get to see very much.
Find a pub or a, you know, cafe with a fire and just curl up for the day.
That's a great idea. I'm not sure if my husband would be into it, but... look, I love your advice, please, Sophie, about plant selection. I've got a garden which is very shady in winter and very hot in summer. It's due to some absolutely magnificent gum trees across the road, which kind of because the sun sort of dips down below their canopies in winter, and so it shades a lot of the garden for maybe like 3 or 4 months. And then in summer, it's, you know, the sun sort of comes above those canopies and so it gets lots of sun. But in winter, I've tried to grow lots of different annually type things that are, you know, colourful, but nothing really likes it very much.
Okay.
Under those conditions.
Can you tell me, are you high up in Ashton? Do you get frost or not really?
Sorry, I live in Hawthorne Dean.
Hawthorne Dean. Okay, so you don't really get frost. Okay, so that's a really interesting point. So what we need to do is we need to choose plants that are, it's sort of a really tough gig, but there are a number of plants that will fit that. One I would be looking at would be to put in some Australian native plants, you know, like Corias and Grevilleas and things like that. They're going to, if they had more sun, they would flower sooner in winter. But they're going to be coming into flower, but they just might do it a bit later than if you had a sunnier patch. So some of the natives like that would be amazing. Eriostemon, which is called the wax flowers, they're beautiful too. So I'd be looking, you know, I'd head along to the local nursery or garden centre and talk about that, because they'll take full sun by the time we get to summer, and they'll also take shade in winter. You know, often they're used to growing under gums, so they're used to a bit of shade. There's two Australian native plants that I love. One is called Plectranthus argentatus. Now, argent means silver. So it's a silver Plectranthus. It will take full sun, and it looks really soft and tender, yet it's this Australian native, and the foliage just lifts a place. And I love that. I also love things like Dianellas. And, you know, they would probably take it too, along with Lamandras. And, you know, there are some other foliage plants. This is not a native, but it's a Mediterranean climate plant. If you find this plant called Iliagnus limelight, now it's a taller shrub, it's going to get, you know, a couple of metres if you let it, but you can, you know, prune it down. But it has really leathery foliage, which means really tough in the heat, and it has bright gold and green variegation. Now, variegation is an interesting one. Some people love it, some people don't. But, you know, I'd certainly be looking at that. If you can – one more plant and then I'll – shut up. I get so excited about plants. Sorry about this. the other plant I would suggest, if you can make sure that it doesn't jump the fence, and that's a big if, is to put in a euphorbia. So euphorbias are the spurges. They are winter flowering, but they will grow in the shade.
Okay. And just quickly, if I wanted to have some annuals in winter so that I can then use the same area for vegetable growing in summer, because I do get the sun in summer, is there anything I could put in that's an annual that doesn't mind?
Okay.
Like, it's not solid shade, but it's probably, like, pretty dappled shade, you know, and quite damp.
Okay. Oh, so what have you tried in the past? I mean, there's all the things that we put in the shade are things like lobelia and violas.
Yes, I've tried violas, and they just get hammered by slugs, and because it's so they're sort of damp. And what have I tried? I've tried spinach, and that just runs. It just doesn't go anywhere. It just sits there.
Have you tried putting in green manure crops? Then you know.
Yes, they get eaten by the slugs. I tried it. Magnificent manure came up beautifully, and then it just all got eaten.
Yeah. Okay, so that's because the plants ultimately aren't happy. You know, if they're in the sun, they would be really happy. Oh, that's a tricky one.
A tricky one,
You know, the leafy greens are generally what you go for if you don't get enough sun in a veggie patch, but you might need to have more snail and slug traps out. You know, maybe that's the way you go, okay, they're not going to be as happy, but they'll still grow and they don't need as much sun. Or, you know, you put in a crop of nasturtiums just for a bit of, you know, colour and chaos.
Thanks for your call, Abby. 1-300-222-891 to speak to Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. And I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away a little bit later on. Quick statement from Andy in the hills. He said, there's too much moving to the hills for a tree change, then chopping all the trees down because they don't like leaves. Please adapt to the surroundings. In terms of the weather, Michelle said, there's no fog at Mount Pleasant for a change. And Chris in Moonta says, it's a cloudless blue sky here at Moonta. Bright winter sun, a fading moon in the west. I'm hoping the sun lasts all day so my lawn might be dry enough to mow later this afternoon. That feels ambitious where I am, but I could imagine grass would have grown significantly over the last week. Things are looking very green.
Absolutely. And, you know, ultimately, I just think we're lucky to be able to get out in our gardens. You know, okay, you rug up, but if we're in the UK in winter, like literally it's sleeting or it's, you know, snowing or the ground is frozen. So while you might think it's cold, it's all relative and we are very lucky that we can garden most of the year round.
Absolutely, and you're very lucky to have Sophie Thompson on ABC Talkback Gardening. Give us a call if you'd like Sophie's invaluable advice. We've been talking about bringing colour to your garden, Sophie, but also there's a variety of shades of green you can bring to your home garden.
Well, there are. Can I say that people often go, oh, there's no colour in my garden in winter. You know, if you actually tune in on it, I mean, I'm looking out on a patch of foliage now. I've got different shades of green. I've got greys. I've got silvers. You know, green is a colour. And when you actually tune into it, you realise that, you know, there are lots of different shades of green. The other thing that I will suggest, now, not everyone likes this, variegated foliage. Foliage can be your colour in winter, and there are amazing plants like we talked about one before called Eleagnus limelight, which is a sort of a medium to tall shrub. But if you want something a bit lower, look at some of the caprosmas. They come from New Zealand and they've got names like Tequila Sunrise or Tequila Sunset. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, they're shades of pinks and reds and oranges and they're vibrant. And if you mix them with a whole lot of greens, they can really pop. And the other thing I'll suggest if you're a bit lost on what to do and you don't feel like gardening but you want to do something that's garden inspired, head to your local nursery or garden centre. I guarantee that you will be blown away by the plants that are in flower at the moment. There are lots of different plants that flower right through winter, right through the cooler weather. And one of years ago I met a gardener who basically would visit a nursery, and husbands are going to be getting twitchy about this. He would visit a nursery every week, right? And he would buy something in flower. And that meant his garden had things in flower for 12 months of the year, right?
Wow.
So really, that's, you know, to me, the test of a good garden is not one that looks fantastic in spring. Everything looks fantastic in spring. Even mow the weeds and they look fantastic in spring. You know, it's a garden that has colour and interest all year round.
Exactly. 729 on ABC Talkback Gardening. Jenny in Nuriupa said, yes, it's foggy in the Barossa. And May, you're in Waiala. You need some advice about pruning fruit trees.
Hi, good morning, Sophie and Troy.
Morning, May.
Hi, how are you? I get confused every year in regards to this summer pruning and winter pruning of my nectarine and peach tree. So after summer, after the fruiting, I reduce the tree somewhat mm-hmm. because it's summer for height, isn't it?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And then winter for fruit. So yep. Can I still reduce the canopy now? Because it still looks a bit tall for me. I'd like to bring it back down.
Ah, okay.
A little bit.
So what happens, that's a really good thing, a good point, May. Thank you for bringing that up. So what happens is we talk about summer pruning, and summer pruning is about reducing the tree's vigour, okay? And if you want to stimulate the tree's vigour, you prune in winter, but reducing the tree's vigour, you prune in summer. Now, ironically, I have some fruit tree workshops today, and one of the experts that's coming up here is a guy called Wes Redden, and he talks about the fact that if you think of a tree, that the leaves are the solar panels of the tree. So if the tree's got lots of leaves on it, it's producing a lot of energy, so therefore it's got more vigour. So when we do the summer prune after fruiting, and we can take up to about 30% off the foliage, we're reducing the vigour so there's less energy. Now, in winter, it's the balance of winter and summer pruning. Winter isn't about giving you fruit. It's actually about making sure that you get rid of any dead wood. Often you can see better that there are branches that are crossing. You know, if you need to open the tree up, you can actually see that better when there's no leaves on the tree. But any prune you do in winter will invoke a more vigorous response, if that makes sense. So right. If you cut the height, it's going to respond with lots of growth. So it's all about getting that balance right. And when we do, sometimes we do more winter pruning when we buy a plant. So we had a lady from Clare ring up, say she's going to go to the nursery and garden centre and buy fruit trees. If she buys them now, they'll be bare rooted. And that means that they've had their roots dug out of the ground. You have to prune the top quite hard to compensate for that. But it's really more about shaping in winter than it is about actually pruning to reduce height. So have a look at the tree. Good. Make sure that it's open. Make sure it's got good air circulation. So good luck with that, May. So it's that balance between winter for form, if you like, and summer for reducing vigour.
Some good advice for you, May, in Waiala. Thanks for your call, 1300 222 891. Talking about pruning, a quick message from Marjorie, who says the Southeast branch of the Rose Society are having a rose pruning demonstration at the Heritage Rose Garden, Petticoat Lane, Panola, next Saturday at 1:30, demonstrated by Dr. Tate Hancocks from the Rose Society of Adelaide. What's great about that is you can listen to ABC Talkback Gardening and then go and see your pruning demonstration. 1300 222 891, or you can send us a text on 0467 922 891. Claire has disappeared in the fog, apparently, and Jane in Northgate says thick fog in Northgate, but clearing now to a sunny morning, which is good to hear. Helen's in Victor Harbour. Something is amiss with your apple tree, Helen.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you, Troy and Sophie, for taking the call. I have a dwarf pink lady and a dwarf Granny Smith in near together. But pink lady this year has, as the fruit ripened, it was just all rotting at the stem. And they were absolutely useless. I had to throw them out.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So there are several fungal-type infections that can affect apples, but I'm not actually familiar with that. What we might do, we might say, if anyone is listening, from the Rare Fruit Society and has an idea about what can be done. So, you know, sometimes when you've got those rot conditions in fruit, it's actually It's nothing we can solve now. It's about management so it doesn't happen again next year. So I would ask if any member of the Rare Fruit Society is out there listening and thinks they know what's causing the rot at the top near the stem, please phone in and give us, and we'll find out for Helen.
Oh, thank you so much, because, yes, I've never had this happen before. I've always had loads of apples to give away, and yeah. I've literally thrown nearly all of them out this year. The Granny Smith is fine, yep. But it's the Pink Lady that is doing it.
How interesting. Okay, we'll see if we can find information. And if not, I'll ask Wes Redden and Chris Day when they arrive here later this afternoon. And I'm sure Wes or Chris will know the answer. So, we'll get back to you.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
You're with Troy Sincock and Sophie Thompson. Talk Back Gardening. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
You most certainly are, and Deb Tribe back in a couple of weekends' time. You've got me this weekend and next weekend because Deb is doing Drive this coming Monday to Friday from 3 to 6. So I hope you'll join me for the next half hour on 1300 222 891. Joining me is Sophie Thompson. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Troy, and good morning, listeners.
We must be doing something right because I've received a text from Michelle and she says, Sophie is a true inspiration.
Oh, good. Good. Fantastic. I am... an absolutely, totally biased gardener, and I think it's the most important thing in life. Well, probably second.
Well, I've got to say that Dwayne from Berry has sent through this incredible photo, which, you know, if you weren't excited about what is possible in a garden, you certainly would be seeing this picture. He says, plenty of red and yellow with my red hot pokers, extremely bright. Now, I've never seen these before, but what it is effectively a stem that is like dead straight, and on top of that, it looks like almost like a conical shaped flowers, red and orange and yellow beneath, and that is in direct sunlight. It looks spectacular.
And so they are called torch lilies, and they're South African and they're really old fashioned. And the, you know, there's lots of fancy new varieties, but my favorite are always the winter flowering ones because they appear, and even if it's foggy, they just delight these bright, bright beacons. There's also a yellow one that you can get, pure yellow, that flowers in sort of May going into June. And not only do they look beautiful, but the honey eating birds will be delighting in their nectar, and they sort of get on those flowers and almost pull the flowers down. And, you know, they're just magical. So well done.
That's great. Jane from Williamstown too sent through a beautiful photo of flourishing hot pink flowers. So really proof, as we've been discussing this morning, there's lots of opportunity to get colour in your garden, even during winter.
Absolutely. And it's about having that balance. We don't want everything flowering in winter because then, you know, when we get to spring and summer, there's nothing happening. But you want a garden that is seasonal and there's always something to look forward to.
Henry in Deep Creek says, misty drizzle since dawn, hazy fire grounds are recovering, which is good news. Thanks for your message as well, Henry. Is it foggy where you are? 1300 222 891 or 0467 922 891. And Steph near Karoo has sent through a message too. Of course, a lot of the conversation has been about the Socceroos going down to Egypt today. But she said, if you were playing football and you were the away team, you wouldn't really want to be wearing white shorts today, given how wet some of the footy grounds would be. Just think of the parents with their kids playing footy today in the white shorts.
Yeah, absolutely.
1300 222 891. So just half an hour of the program to go. Then we've got independent climatologist Darren Ray with his long range forecast. So let's get straight back into the calls. And waiting patiently in Henley Beach is Sue. How can we help you with your pomegranate?
Oh, good morning. I've got two pomegranates. One's done the right thing and dropped its leaves, but the other one is covered in new growth. And they're a bit hard to prune in summer because they've always got fruit or flowers on them. Mm. So when do I prune it? It's covered in beautiful red new growth.
Oh, well, if you need to prune it now, absolutely, because, right. You know, the more you leave that new growth on there, the more it's going to grow. And bear in mind that, you know, lots of people don't prune pomegranates, but if you can and open them up, you know, they want to become this multi- stemmed thicket. And so what we're trying to do is choose, you know, maybe a half a dozen strong, evenly spaced branches that become the framework, if you like, for your tree, and remove the rest. And all the new shoots, pomegranates fruit on older wood, so you don't want to get rid of everything, but you want to just keep this framework that stays and get rid of the other sort of clutter. You know, probably water shoots is a better term.
Great. Thicket is the right word.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And they're absolutely beautiful. And if you've never grown a pomegranate, I'd even tell you whether you eat them or not, don't worry about that. They are the most gorgeous looking plants and they love our climate.
They do. Thank you.
Good on you, Sue.
Thanks for your call, 1-300-222-891. Rachel says, I'm working this morning. I took my chances and put in some late Burnley Bounty tomatoes here in Cherry Gardens. They look okay considering the cold. They did produce about 10 small green tomatoes. I'm planning on looking after them and see if they last the winter and are happy in spring.
And can I tell you, Burnley Bounty is an amazing variety. It was developed in Victoria, and it's a cold tolerant tomato. So if you can get it in early enough, if you put it in March, so it's actually had a chance to grow quite tall, it will continue to crop despite the cool weather. And even if you plant it late, it's still worth doing. I've got some in. And yeah, so good on her, because Burnley, you know, it is possible to have in a frost-free area and, you know, still a little bit of a warm microclimate, it is possible to have tomatoes through winter.
And Rachel in Cherry Gardens has sent through a photo of her quince tree in beautiful golden colour. She said, please ignore the soursobs. I'd imagine.
Well, they're colour too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kathy's in Door Park. How can Sophie help you?
Hi, Sophie and Troy. How are you going?
Great, thank you.
Listen, I'm heading off down to Victor today to help some friends hopefully plant out an area. They recently had an extension put on, and the dirt and stuff that's been dragged up from that extension is really heavy, dense clay. Now, I know you were saying that earlier about liquid clay breaker. This area is about the size of a driveway, and it's so thick, the clay, that it's the water's running off. How can we deal with that?
They need to get a trailer load of gypsum. You know, not
gypsum.
You know, you can buy it in bulk. So you need a decent amount of gypsum, and if you can actually work it through the clay. So the idea of clay is little fine particles that stick together. And, you know, the other thing they do in summer is they sort of crack, and you can put your hands through the cracks. And in winter they're gluggy and they hold onto water and it's just a nightmare. So gypsum looks like sand and it gets between the clay particles and stops them sticking and makes it more workable. So if there's some way you can get gypsum and work it through. Now, it's going to be a nightmare to do that. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but ultimately you need a lot of gypsum work through. Now, people go, clay is such a nuisance. Clay is actually, in many cases, clay is easier or is better than sand, because sand doesn't hold on to moisture and clay does. We just need to make the clay workable, and that's what gypsum will do.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, even if they spread the gypsum now and they go, well, when it's a bit drier, we'll get a rotary hoe to work it through, because obviously they've brought this, you know, the subsoil up to the surface. So we need to, step one is to put gypsum through. Then you, once you've got that work through, then you could start to add some organic matter and then you'll be able to plant in it.
Fabulous. And look, just quickly, what would be a couple of plants that do well in clay soil, ground covers?
Okay, well, there's some, if we go back to really old-fashioned common ones, and it's full sun, so there's an old-fashioned plant called an osteospermum. There's all these new varieties of them now that only get about a metre across, but the old-fashioned one is a quite rampant South African ground cover that either has white flowers with a blue eye or hot cerise pink flowers, and there's a couple of other forms too, and So very old-fashioned, very vigorous, and, you know, produces flowers in springtime that are winter, spring that are gorgeous, and probably Unley Gardeners Plant Rescue, because I know you're involved with that, Kathy, would have some of them. And, you know, another one that I love is Arctotis, the old-fashioned forms of Arctotis, which is called a veld daisy, another South African with daisies. The old-fashioned forms spread infinitely and they layer, and both of those would grow in harsh clay and cope with it.
Thanks for your call, Kathy. It's 14 past nine. In the next 10 minutes, I'll give away two ABC Gardening Australia magazines, so stay by the phone. And it seems, Sophie, inadvertently, we've created some sort of competition with the Hot Pokers this morning. Ted has sent through a photo, which is, oh, I reckon, as good as the last one. So thanks to everyone sending through their photos of colour in the garden during winter. 1-300-222-891. Carol is next in Wallaroo. How's your native garden growing going, Carol?
Very good. I've run out of room for trees and shrubs, and I'd like to grow some ground covers suitable for walking on and for my little chihuahua to run and play on. And I'd like them to be natives because it's a native garden. I've run out of room.
Go you. Well, the obvious one is Dichondra, which is the Nomo sort of lawn alternative. But can I say, if you're going to track on it a lot, you will wear it down. So I would tell you to put stepping stones through it that you walk on, and then the ground covers just fill in between them. So Dichondra, which is called Tom Thumb, the green one is gorgeous. There is a silver one, but that's not native. There are some other native ground covers I love, but I am going to say that they will, because they flower, they're going to bring in butterflies and bees, okay? So therefore, you know, you wouldn't want to be walking barefoot on them.
Oh, the garden's full of bees now, so it's a case of, they're friendly bees. We've never been stung.
Oh, good. Well, so Myoporum, which is called Creeping Boobiella, and there's lots of different forms. I quite like, if we're talking about an amazing ground cover, I quite like the large, it's called a broadleaf form, and it has little white flowers. And when it's in flower, you'll have a carpet of butterflies. There's an Eremophila that I love that I first saw growing up at the Arrowlands Botanic Gardens, and it's called Biserata. And doesn't have a common name, I'm sorry, but B-I-S-E-R-R-A-T-A. And it forms this carpet, three plants in a front yard, and you could replace the front lawn, right? It's just like this green carpet, beautiful. Well, the flowers are a little bit more insignificant. And then one other plant, just because I've got it growing everywhere in my orchard and I love it, there is a type of saltbush called Atriplex semibaccata, and it, you know, you plant one and it'll grow a couple of metres, and it's got that silver grey foliage that's got a hint of purple and pink in at this time of year. And the great thing about when you plant saltbush of any types, they bring in all sorts of beneficial bugs. So lots of opportunity for you, Carol. You and your little chihuahua are going to have a beautiful garden, or you already do by the sounds.
Yeah, well, the gardeners informed me I've run out of room for any more shrubs.
Up the walls.
Good on you, Carol. Thanks very much for calling. 1-300-222-891 on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill. You're on Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson. Troy Sincock filling in for Deb Tribe. And Deb will be on all next week, Monday to Friday from 3 till 6, then back again in a couple of weekends' time. Shah from Kingscote sent through a photo of her bromeliads, this bright pink colour against brown fallen leaves. Looks absolutely spectacular. And Mel tells me that it's very foggy at Henley Beach, although here at ABC the Collinswood Studios, I've just seen the first sign of sunlight, which makes me very optimistic about the day ahead. Now, if you'd like to win yourself an ABC Gardening Australia magazine, you can do that right now. We're going to give one away to a caller, one away to a texter. So to call 1-300-222-891 and to text, please send through your full name and address to 0467-922-891.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Troy Sincock and Sophie Thompson. 891. ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And a very good morning to you, Adrian, in Woodcroft. Have you had a bit of fog out your way?
No fog out here at all. It's been just cloudy.
Fantastic. Half your luck. Now, you're looking to attract birds to your garden?
Yes, I've got a very low-maintenance garden because I'm disabled. And I've got a grevillea just outside my front window that attracts the honeybirds. And I've got a 1.5 square metre spare patch of ground. And I want to know what to plant to attract birds.
Okay, well, you know, the three sort of go-to native ground covers would be corias, grevilleas like you've already got, but there are lots of different types, and also some of the ground cover banksias. Now, the thing, you know, to bear in mind is that not only are we wanting to plant, we're needing to make sure that we've got water for birds nearby, because otherwise they're going to be thirsty, and also that it's safe for birds, because sometimes people plant for birds but forget, you know, they've got a cat that goes outside, which we shouldn't do. So, you know, I would look at either corias, grevilleas or banksias, and they are going to be gorgeous, look beautiful for you and attract the birds.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for your call, Adrian. Robin from McKernel Light Gardens. Oh dear, what's happening to your apple trees?
Good morning to you both. Yes, Sophie, please, I need your advice. I've got a seriously bad infestation of woolly aphids on several apple trees that are sort of next to each other, so probably they crawl from one to the other, I'm not sure. But I'm just not sure how to tackle it, or what to spray it with or what to do right now. Can you help me, please?
I can. Now, can you tell me, are these old apple trees?
They're probably 3 to 4 years old.
Oh, okay. Because some of the newer varieties, the newer rootstocks, don't tend to get as affected as much. So, I mean, I would still say that bringing in the good guys, which I talk about all the time, you know, with planting daisies and umbels, is still really important, and even, you know, having a type of saltbush somewhere in your garden is going to bring in a number of the parasitoids, because they will help to keep it down. Are the aphids on the stems or more down towards the root system?
Mostly on the smaller branches, sort of low down branches.
And how tall are these trees?
Two and a half metres tall.
Okay, so you can reach them. Okay, so at this time of year, if you get a horticultural oil that, you know, and you thoroughly spray it, that will actually smother the breathing apparatus of the aphids and they'll die. Do look right down near the ground, because sometimes they go, you know, down near the root system to overwinter, and try and give that a good squirt too. But, you know, long-term I'd be trying to improve the biodiversity so you've got more beneficials that come in and manage them for you.
Okay, so I have a choice of three things in my arsenal. I have neem oil, eco oil or white oil. Would you recommend any of those? Or a combination of them? Or?
Actually, you could combine neem with eco oil really well. And I think on one of the labels it tells you the proportion, and the neem will work and the oil will act as a spreader, and both of those would work great. But actually, you know, either oil would work well, but I like eco oil because it's based on organically grown Australian canola.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Terrific.
All the best.
Thank you very much.
I hope that helps you out, Robin. Thanks for calling. We've got Darren Ray, our independent climatologist, on with his long-range forecast at 9:30 this morning. And congratulations to Liz from Darlington and Sherry from Salisbury Heights. Both have won an ABC Gardening Australia magazine. We'll have more to give away next Saturday, 1-300-222-891. Up next is David in Walkerville. What's your problem in your garden, David?
Yes, good morning, both of you. I've got two cycads that I planted about 3 years ago in identical pots, identical soil, and both in the first couple of years, they both grew together and doing well. This year, one is growing well from the centre, and the fronds, outer fronds, are standing. The other one hasn't shot any fronds from the middle this year, and the fronds, the outer fronds, are all drooping. I don't know why.
Oh, you know, nature just loves to baffle us sometimes, and there's always a reason, but sometimes it's hard to identify. Are they right next to each other or either side of a doorway or something?
They're either side of a fish pond.
Okay. So the one that's not doing well, there's obviously something going wrong with that. I would be looking at using seaweed-based plant tonics on it. I would be making sure that it doesn't have something like mealybug, which is how you tell if it's got mealybug. They're tiny little white fluff, basically, right in the crown down low. And sometimes it affects plants that are under stress. I would also be looking possibly to treat that soil with a biological stimulant, right? There are a number of products you can buy that are about basically soil microbes, and you treat that soil and bring life back to it. You know, whether it dried out a little bit more in summer in the heat and that triggered it to be stressed, whatever it is, we've got to stop it being stressed and see if we can bring it back. But do investigate and see if there's any, if you're getting close, if there's any, if you move the fronds, if there's any little white things like mealybug, because that can certainly stress plants in pots.
Thank you. I'll give it a try.
All the best with that, David.
Joan is in Greenwith. Hello, Joan. You'll be our lucky last caller on ABC Talkback Gardening.
How can we help you, Joan?
Well, Sophie, all my life I'd wanted to grow a grevillea. Now, Robin Gordon is one of the originals originally bred. I know that it is prone to yellow leaves leaves that go yellow due to an iron problem. I want to grow one about that size, and also I do want to ask you roughly how many months of the year they will flower. Second question, but I did hear about one that doesn't have that problem, but I can't remember the name.
Oh, okay. So you're right. So Robin Gordon is a gorgeous grevillea and is quite sensitive to alkaline soils. So if you're in areas with alkaline soils, it often goes yellow. If you're in areas with acid soils, it's not a problem. I would suggest actually you head to the local nursery or garden centre that specialises in native plants because their knowledge of lime-tolerant grevilleas is fantastic. There's other ones called Ned Kelly and all sorts, but I can't think of one off the top of my head, Joan. So either go to somewhere like State Flora where they'll be able to help you. So State Flora has a branch across the other side of town at Blair and one up at Murray Bridge, or get in touch with your local plant society. There are actually local grevilleas that would naturally have grown in your area. So if you get onto your council's website, they'll probably have a list of those too.
Do you know how many months of the year they would flower for?
Oh, they can flower on and off for, 3 to 6 months if they're happy. The thing is that when they're not happy, they go yellowy, but you can actually correct that. If you apply extra iron, that will actually bring them back. So if you've got one that you go, well, it's gone really yellow, why not try and treat it with iron chelates to green it up rather than just not try it at all?
Okay, thank you, Sophie.
All the best, Joan.
Oh, I'm glad we got Joan back. I was worried about Joan.
you were feeling guilty. You thought it might have been you.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be beyond me to press the wrong button, that's for sure, Sophie. Hey, look, it's been great being with you again today on Talkback Gardening. You'll be back with Sputnik tomorrow?
I will be back with Sputnik tomorrow, and I'm also back next weekend. I'm coming to you from interstate next weekend, but we'll be talking all things worms because we get lots of callers about what happens when you take some, worm castings out of your worm farm and put them in the garden. What happens with the compost worms? So we're going to be talking all things worms with Peter Heidenreich, who's a worm expert. So tune in next Saturday for lots of groundbreaking talk.
Oh, look at you go. Sophie, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your Saturday. We'll hear you on the radio tomorrow morning.
Look forward to it, Troy. Happy gardening to all our listeners.